Hello and welcome to Stranger Stopping Strangers, podcast number 36. A big welcome back to anybody who's returning, and thanks for stopping in to anybody who's new this week. Well, this week's podcast, I get a chance to talk to Jason Fisher. And Jason and I met via the podcast. He was listening and sent me a note, and we started some correspondence, and here we are. So much fun getting to make a new friend from across the country, and, you know, really what Stranger Stopping Strangers is all about. So we start off with Let It Rock, his selection, which was very apropos, because we tape the podcast a day after the late but always great Chuck Berry passed. And it really kicked off a bit of a theme of the Grateful Dead's influence by musicians and songwriters, and how they now are influencing current and future musicians and songwriters. And it was a really fun conversation. And we play a couple songs for his kids, future budding Deadheads. So just a really great time, and very full circle to the past, current, and future generations of Deadheads. And really, if anybody is listening and would like to share their story and make a digital soundtrack, please shoot me an email, because I'd love to hear from you. And it's really a community podcast and what it's all about. So I hope everybody enjoys listening as much as we enjoyed making it. And we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Well, Jason, welcome to Stranger Stopping Strangers.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. We've chatted a little bit and gotten little, you know, taste of our stories, but I'm excited to do a deep dive in here, you know, how it all unravels.
I can't wait. It should be fun.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about the beginning. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your early days with music and discovery time.
Yeah, I would absolutely call myself a late bloomer. When it comes to my my friendship and my relationship with this music and being an actual Deadhead, I grew up in a small town in Colorado, and I was the oldest of four kids. I had a few friends that had older brothers that could kind of guide them into music. You know, you want to listen to this band, you want to blow off these cheesy bands, and I never had that, and so I kind of picked my way through myself. I was always around the Dead. My hometown's kind of like a, you know, hippie paradise, and so the Dead was always there playing in, you know, the kitchens of restaurants where I worked in and all this kind of stuff, but it was always just kind of in the background of my life. I believe you had a guest on your podcast a while ago who attended the show in Telluride in 1987.
Yeah, Jeff Rosen. And, that was awesome.
Yes. And when that came along, I was 14 years old. I was just kind of working on a construction crew for the summer, and everybody on the crew and everybody in town was just kind of going nuts. Oh, the Dead's coming to Telluride. It's the closest that they had ever been, you know, to my part of Colorado. And so, you know, they were going, and people were asking me if I was going to go, if I wanted to go, but it just seemed really kind of weird and foreign to me, and my folks didn't let me go anyway. And so I missed that. And as I, you know, got into high school and beyond, I started listening to the Dead a lot more. I found some friends that, you know, had some tapes, and, you know, just kind of like, you know, filled in my gaps. I had picked up a few studio albums and a few tapes over the years, and I was just really able to fill in some of my, you know, gaps in my knowledge and really pick up more of this band. But it didn't really stick right away. I saw the Dead three times in the early 90s in Vegas and in Phoenix, you know, big stadium shows. My experience was not the greatest at these. I was really far back. The sound quality to me wasn't that great. I was there and it was fun, but it didn't really click with me.
Right.
And then when Jerry passed, I mean, it hit me, you know, in terms of like, you know, I knew that we lost somebody that was meaningful and impactful to my life, but it was around the same time that Kurt Cobain died and Tupac Shakur died. And the analogy I always come up with is those three deaths all kind of hit me about the same in terms of like, oh, that's really sad, and I'm really sad to lose that music. But it wasn't like a big devastating thing to me, because at that time I wasn't a huge fan. But then in the late 90s, I got hooked up with some friends that were really, really into Widespread Panic. And I started going to a ton of Widespread shows, and I sort of picked up on, you know, the tour scene and the lot, and, you know, going on these long runs, multiple shows, multiple nights, traveling with a band, that kind of thing. And I realized this whole world of music. And the Dead was, again, always in the background for me. You know, I started listening more and more, you know, to 70s Dead and a lot of Jerry Band. And it really started clicking with me, started going to a lot of, you know, other ones, further shows, Phil and Friends, Rat Dog. I've got to a point now, you know, I mean, I'm older, I've got kids, and I listen to more Dead and Dead-related music than I ever have. I'm much more of a fan than I was when the actual Grateful Dead was on this earth. I'm sad that I didn't, you know, do more back then, but I'm really, really happy to have access to what we do right now as fans in this day and age.
Well, I agree. And there is, I mean, there's just so much fun stuff to look forward to. And, you know, I love hearing what you say about the future and going forward, because, you know, regardless of how old you are, you know, we can't go backwards. It is about going forward. And there's just so much fun music coming up, you know, on the horizon every day.
Yes, there is.
Very cool. So I want to go into some music. And the first song that you selected is not new music. In fact, it's old, it's classic, and it's more apropos today on the 20th of March than ever before. So tell me a little bit about your first pick.
Well, this is a song called Let It Rock, and it is appropriate today. It's a Chuck Berry song, and we lost Chuck Berry over the weekend. Obviously, he contributed quite a few songs to the Grateful Dead songbook, you know, Around and Around and Promised Land. And this is a song that Jerry Garcia played a lot, you know, with Jerry Band. I was first turned on to this song from Widespread Panic. They played it a fair amount in their live repertoire. And this was a show from 1974. And it was the only time that this song was played by the Grateful Dead.
Wow.
It's a cool version. It's a pretty short, snappy version, nice podcast length. And I hope you like it.
Fantastic. Well, I'm really excited. I did have a listen, and it is really cool, and I'm excited to share it. So everybody, let's hear Let It Rock from the late, great Chuck Berry, and then we'll be back.
Thank you.
listening to Let It Rock. And, you know, I just love that you made this selection for so many reasons. I mean, yes, it is apropos to what is Chuck Berry passing, but, you know, it's been such a huge topic that I've bantered around with a couple of people, and I'd love to just get your perspective on, which is, you know, just the idea that this classic music, this genre of music that was, you know, created in the back half of the 20th century is being played by so many musicians. And I feel like it's almost alleviating the words cover band or covering, you know, like I think I talked about it with Ira and I love to get everyone's different opinions about it, because with other musical genres, with classic and with jazz, it's just a given that different people are going to play the same music that was written. And what are your thoughts on that going forward?
Well, yeah, I believe it was Ira that was talking about, you know, Beethoven. When we talk about Beethoven music, you know, this was music that was written hundreds of years ago, and it's been performed continuously to this day. Shakespeare plays have been performed continuously to this day. And we still think of them as compositions by Beethoven and by Shakespeare, and we pay attention to who is performing them, because obviously some people performing them are of a higher skill level. Some people put new and different spins and interpretations on them, but we still think of them as works by the original composers that are still modern and fresh, even though the people that created them have long since passed. And what I love about the catalog of a band of the Grateful Dead is, you know, they created and composed, you know, hundreds of fantastic songs. I think it's the greatest catalog of any band in the history of music in terms of the scope and depth of the music that they created. I mean, the Beatles made great music, but they were only together as a band for like 7 years. And you can, you know, rattle off, I mean, Bob Dylan is a fantastic songwriter, you know, but Bob Dylan does not, in my opinion, have the range and depth of creating various forms of rock and roll. Bob Dylan did not necessarily create an entire musical genre of his own. But what's great about the Dead is that they were able to sprinkle in all of this great original music that they composed with many, many works comprising the entire American songbook. They've gone back to, you know, I mean, old traditional songs and you know, Woody Guthrie, you know, early Americana, that kind of stuff, and old blues. And then, you know, taken more like contemporary, you know, pop music from their, you know, people that were recording at the same time, you know, the band and The Who and bands like that. And you were able to go and you know, go attend a Dead show or listen to a Dead show, and you didn't know where these songs were going to be in terms of order in the set, and it didn't really matter because they're putting their own spin and interpretation on what they're playing, and they made everything Dead songs. Yeah. And what's happening now is if those Dead songs are being played by other bands that are either quote-unquote Dead cover bands, or they're being played by modern contemporary musicians that have nothing otherwise to do with the Dead, the music lives on. The music never stops. And it's just becoming part of the fabric of listening to American music. It's not segregated from everything else. It's, you know, I remember when I was a kid, it just seemed like the Dead was its own category.
Yeah.
And it still is, you know, but it's more tied together with everything. I think they're getting more and more recognition as not just being a cultural phenomenon, but as one of the greatest creators of original American music that there ever been.
I totally agree. And even the original creators of American music that incorporate other songwriters and other people's original music, you know, like the Beatles and like,
yes,
Chuck Berry and like, you know,
yes,
many Bob Dylan songs. And,
yes,
you know, I just think it's a really exciting time, you know, and I love talking about it because, as we said before we went into Let It Rock, you know, the company is coming up and we're all excited to go because of just, you know, the music and the vibe and the people all together. And I, I think it's a really exciting time. And I think that in other genres, it's been accepted. And really, when you look at the difference, it's a matter of time and time changes everything. And I think we're in a transitional time right now where things are being broken down and new bands are creating catalogs that are, again, not cover or, you know, I just think it's exciting and I love talking about it because, you know, this shit's new. I mean, again, it's like late 20th century and classical origins go back to 19th century and the, you know, the blues and the jazz, you know, they go back to early 20th century. So I think everything takes time to evolve.
Yes. And you know, many of the themes, you know, that the Dead wrote about in their original songs. I mean, some of them are just it's timeless themes. It's love and loss and, you know, crime and redemption and all of these things. But there are some things that the Dead was never like a super political band, but they did hit on, you know, some things in terms of, you know, modern society and government and the citizens' role in it. That with each new chapter of American history that we're writing, you know, some of these songs and ideas take on new relevance.
Absolutely.
And it's really neat to look at the world through that prism as we do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like you look at something like New Speed Boogie, you know, which is old.
Yes.
And then you look at something like Throwing Stones, which was, you know, in the late 80s. And, you know,
yes.
And even that was, you know, gosh, almost 30 years ago. You know, I want to play more music, but I want to sidebar. You just hit on a story that is just so relevant in my recent history. And it's when I went to go see Dark Star Orchestra in November, they were, you know, they were doing a recreation show and it was right after the election. And a lot of the songs, the people didn't know if it was a recreation show or not, I guess is what I'm trying
okay.
to say. And so a lot of the songs that they played, people thought they were creating this catalog to be relevant to what was going on in today. So, you know, at the set break, you know, people are like, this isn't a recreation show. This is for now. You know, this is November.
Right.
This is what's going on. These are all very specific songs that they've selected.
Like they created the set list as a topical thing.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
And that was
right.
kind of the buzz, you know, at the set break of like, that's what was happening. And then at the end, it was from like 1989, you know,
sure.
like it was
sure.
a recreation. And so, again, it's all like relative to, you know, what's going on in our world and what we think and what we hear and how it transcends. And people were so convinced that this was all now, but
right.
it wasn't. It was 89, but it was as real now as it was then.
Of course it is. Yes. These themes. And these ideas are timeless. We can apply them, you know, to many different situations, and it makes the music fuller and richer and more relevant.
Absolutely. No, totally. Well, so let's go on to the next song. So the next song that you picked, I want to hear some of the feelings and stories and reasons behind, is Dark Hollow.
Yes. Dark Hollow was almost always performed as an acoustic song. I mean, they did the big acoustic runs in 1970 and 1980. The ones from 1980 were recorded for the Reckoning album. And that was probably the first live Grateful Dead album that I really just obsessed over. I mean, listened to Reckoning so many times. And when I finally discovered archive.org, what was a really neat thing for me was going back through all of those shows, like the Radio City run in 1980, because the Reckoning album was a compilation. It wasn't, you know, a straight through recording. It was, you know, they picked, you know, what they thought were the best recordings there. And Dark Hollow was always one of my favorites from that run. And I always heard this urban legend that they had played Dark Hollow with, you know, with the electric band. And the more reading I did on it, I found that there were two shows in 1971 where they played it with the electric band. One, Jerry was still on acoustic, but this version is from April of 71, which was the only time that they ever played this song with Jerry plugged in.
Wow.
And it's a swinging version of a song that's usually a little bit more mellow, but it's still, you know, beautiful Bobby lyrics and wonderful song that I've enjoyed a lot with my family, actually.
Well, it does have it is one of those songs, and I think like a handful of the songs and Reckonings are very, they have that childlike folklore, I guess I want to say, a folkloric sense that is, you know, that appeals to children.
They're like sing-along campfire songs.
Exactly.
Right,
Well,
right.
This version, I bet, is going to be new for so many listeners, so let's go in and hear it, and then we'll go a little bit down the road, so everybody enjoy.
Thank you. I'd rather be in some dark hollow where the sun don't ever shine than to be in some big city in a small room with a girl on my mind. So blow your whistle, freight train, takes me far. Where the sun don't ever shine, than to be home alone, knowing that you're gone, would cause me to lose my mind. So blow your whistle, freight train, take me far on down the track.
And Reckoning. And it's funny putting this on. This happened with a lump of two podcasts and it's happening now. And, you know, I mean, anyone who's listened to these podcasts, I just love a little serendipity and magic around everything. I managed to find it every week. So I think my first recording from Reckoning is on the podcast that aired today with Eli. And so that happened with, I had choices and then two choices again. So I wonder what that means.
There's someone looking out for you.
There's someone that's like drawing in that direction, right?
Yes.
You know, like when you get drawn back to something, you know, to have the sequence of selections that happen in a row. I think it's cool. I mean, as we've, you know, you've mentioned, there's so much out there that, you know, there's so much. Have the repetitive, well, I guess this isn't from Reckoning, but to have Reckoning come up 2 weeks in a row and not come up before is, makes me want to dig into it some more.
It's a great album.
Absolutely. The next pick on your list is from the Nationals with Morning Dew. So, you know, tell me a little bit about, you know, where you were when you came to this and a little bit of that backstory.
Well, yeah, this is a compilation album that was put together by the Dessner brothers. I believe their names are Aaron and Bryce Dessner, who are the rhythm section of The National. The National is not a band that I've ever listened to obsessively, but they're a, you know, good band, and I listen to a lot of indie rock, and so they've always kind of been in my sphere. But they put this album together. It was a long-term project that they did. They developed a really strong friendship with Bob Weir when Bob recorded his album of cowboy music last year, Blue Mountain. They served as his backing band on that album.
Really?
And when he toured last year, they served as his backing band on that tour. And so, you know, Bobby's on the album a couple times, playing with the National and with Wilco. there's a few other, you know, I mean, it's either Bill Kreutzmann or his kids are on there. Bruce Hornsby does a really, really great version of Black Muddy River, probably my favorite recording of that song, with a guy from Bon Iver. And there's just a lot of bands that I really like that I had no idea that they were even into the Dead. I mean, Kurt Vile and the War on Drugs and Real Estate and Courtney Barnett and Wilco, you know, put really great versions of songs. I mean, what I consider a great cover is if you're playing somebody else's song, what you do is you change the listener's perception of that song. And there's different kinds of covers. The one I always go to is sometimes a cover will actually steal a song from the original artist. And I always think about Hendrix's version of All Along the Watchtower. Like, essentially, you know, once Hendrix played it, you know, Bob Dylan was probably like, well, you know, that one's yours now.
It's over. Yeah,
no. Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah, no, absolutely. But I think about, like, Joe Crocker's career was like,
yes,
a Beatles cover, right? I mean,
yes,
like, that's another great, I think about, is just completely took that song and turned it into something else. And if you were to say, name a Joe Crocker song, it, you know.
I could buy with a little help from my friends, yes.
Exactly. Though I don't think he took it over in a better way personally. But anyways, no shade to Joe Crocker, but the Beatles.
Yeah, but, you know, this version of Morning Dew, I mean, this is a song that in general that I've really started to get deeper into over the last year. It wasn't, you know, if you talked to me a year or 2 years ago, I wouldn't have listed Morning Dew as one of my favorite Dead songs. Never disliked it, but it was just kind of there for me. But I've done more reading on, you know, just kind of like the history behind the songwriting process with this song. I've listened to more and more versions. The Cornell 5877 that's coming out in May. This is the one single that was released off of it that they've been playing a little bit on, you know, Sirius XM, and you can get it on the streaming services. And so this is just a song that I've been more into. The Nationals version of it is, I think, really neat. They do it in, you know, I think the proper and respectful tempo for this song. You know, their recording style and the vocalist style is just kind of echoing and haunting, and it really fits the lyrics and the pace of this song. And so this was one of the songs off of that Day of the Dead compilation that stood out to me. And like we were talking about earlier, you know, the music is continuing and it's being adopted by, you know, younger and more contemporary musicians and taken in different directions. And I think it's fantastic.
I'm really excited to have it on. Absolutely. I love that you are bringing something new to the table, you know, and some people may have heard it and some people may not. And then, you know, it makes me want to go hear more about what they've done. You know, it just exposes different musicians and different angles. And very, very cool. Well, let's go in and hear it. And then we'll come back and maybe talk a little bit about what's next on the list, which is kind of like what's next on the road. So I'm excited to dive in to the next topic. So everybody enjoy listening to Morning Dew from the Nationals, and we will be back.
Sounds great.
In the morning, do my
Listening to Morning Dew, and you know, the next incarnation of the band that you selected is Dead & Company, but I don't want to talk right away about, you know, your selection, but just, you know, a little bit about, you know, past experience and future experiences coming up with seeing the band on the road.
Okay. Yeah. I came into Dead & Company. I think my experience was similar to a lot of other fans, in that, you know, Fare Thee Well was a really cool idea and a really cool project. I did not attend the shows, but I watched the webcast, really thought Trey did a fantastic job, had a lot of friends that went to those shows, and they came back and said, you know, it was fun and the vibe was cool and the music sounded great. And then, you know, immediately, like, the echo of Fare Thee Well had not even finished ringing, and we're talking about Dead & Company. And we're not only talking about, you know, another version of the band, but we've got John Mayer jumping in there. And I had the same level of skepticism about John Mayer that a lot of people did. And I also have come to really appreciate and enjoy, you know, what he's doing. And I like it more every day. I listen to it more every day. But, yeah, I was able to get up to Boulder last year and see Dead & Company, went with some good friends of mine, took the whole family up there, and but the kids did not go to the show. We rented a house and had a babysitter with the kids, and I went with our friends and with my wife. It was my wife's first Dead show.
So what did she think of the scene? What did she think of just like the overall scene of the people and, you know?
She had a high level of skepticism coming in. And she thought it was, I can't speak for her. I can't say that, you know, what exactly she thought it was going to be, but she had some nervousness. Is this going to be just crazy, drug-fueled anarchy? but, you know, we go to the first night, and she comes out, and she was just like, man, you know, that was really good. And I knew most of those songs, and I was singing along and dancing, and I had a really, really good time. And then we went to the second night. And we, you know, we're kind of like packing up for the weekend, and she approached me and she's like, okay, you know, I'm not a deadhead, but that was really, really fun. And if we could ever do that again, I would do it. And so our Christmas card this year, I made a picture of the two of us at that show, and I just put deadheads at the bottom, and she laughed.
Aww. Well, you know, it's funny. I have a similar experience, and I asked because over the summer, last summer, I took my husband to SPAC to see Dead & Co. And,
yes.
And he is a huge music fan. I mean, he knows, you know, as much about music, more about music than I do, about so many, you know, different bands. And he loves great music. I mean, similar genres, great taste, but he's not a deadhead. You know, he's just,
right.
He's not. He can appreciate, he has some favorite songs. You know, he had Skeletons in the Closet when he was in high school, and he never saw them live. And since we've been together, he's gotten to know the catalog more and has you know, some favorites, but not a deadhead. Music fan, not a deadhead.
Sure.
So I was, so he came with me, and he's actually going to come with me this year to SPAC too. And he was so funny. He got lost. He took off like at the beginning of, I want to say like it was the first song, to go get something to drink. And it was an outdoor venue, and he didn't figure out that to get through the crowds back down, that you just have to walk through the crowds, you know, like,
yeah.
you don't walk around. You just like the sea will part, and you just walk.
You have to take the initiative, and people will let you through. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he had no idea. So he was gone the whole first set. So I was just kind of like by myself, which is cool. You know, like I made some friends, had a good time, you know, like all good, and dance and whatever. And I was kind of like, oh, he's gone. I hope he's having a good time. You know, like, I don't know where you are. It's been, you know, I don't know, well over an hour. Pop back, and there was some guy that was like dressed completely in like a rainbow onesie bodysuit thing. I don't know. He came back with some pretty funny, you know, like observations and shit that, you know, he hasn't seen at other shows. And the verdict was enjoyed himself, but at SPAC, not interested in going to any indoor venues, any like crowded venues, any big
right.
places. Like and we'll go back to SPAC because I said, are you going to come to Fenway? And he's like, fuck no, you know, like no, like not in for like any spot, any venue, but for like a fun summer place. Yeah, sure. For the once a year.
Yeah, well, venue's a big deal. And I mean, I've been to a lot of great venues around the country, and it really, really adds to the experience of the show that you're seeing. I've seen some great bands in some crappy venues, and you know, if you're great, you're great, you know. But I'd rather see somebody in a place that is comfortable and looks cool, and you just kind of get the vibe of the building or the arena that you're in. A cool venue can make everybody have a better time.
No, absolutely. No, I totally agree. I think it's good to just sort of know where you're at, know where your limits are, and know what you're into, and just do that, you know? So it was a good experience that will hopefully be repeated as a good experience this June. So, you picked St. Stephen. So tell me that, tell me a little bit about how you came to this song from Dead & Company as the next selection.
The reason I kind of landed on St. Stephen is I've just kind of been thinking and following John Mayer's progression with this band, and I've ended up, you know, I don't know how I got here, but I've ended up like listening to a lot of John Mayer live music from before he joined Dead & Company, and he sort of got this little Dead bug a few years ago, and he'd been playing, you know, Friend of the Devil and Althea, and Going Down the Road Feeling Bad, just throwing those songs into his repertoire before Dead & Company ever came along, and he had this relationship with Bob Weir. He met Bob Weir and played with him a little bit, and John Mayer is a fantastic guitar player. You've had numerous people on your show that have talked about his skill as a player, and you know, beyond that, just, you know, his passion for music. What I think is really, really neat is his relationship with Bobby. They have this thing that's kind of a cosmic thing. John Mayer was born on Bob Weir's 30th birthday. And you know, so here in October, you know, Bobby's going to be turning 70 on the same day that John Mayer's turning 40, and they have just a really neat relationship that is partly like musical mentor, partly like father figure, but partly like just, you know, buddies. And they have a lot of respect for each other as musicians and as people, and their friendship is really visible, and it's just kind of a neat thing to see. But what Mayer plays all this stuff. Mostly he plays it very faithfully. You know, he's not trying to copy what Garcia did, but he's staying within the song. He's staying within the structure and melody of the song. And if we're listening as, you know, longtime fans of the music, there's not much that Mayer does that really kind of steps outside the tradition. But I have noticed as I was playing a lot of shows from the summer tour last year that with St. Stephen, he tends to go in a little bit different direction. He plays it as more of a little bit more feedback, a little bit more crunch, to the guitar that you might get from like a 80s hard rock guitar sound, and he kind of shreds it a little bit, and I think it's great. What they did with St. Stephen was, I thought, a little bit outside the tradition, taking it from its psychedelic roots to a different place that I think is new and interesting, and it kind of fits the theme that we're talking about of keeping the music modern and fresh and moving forward. I do not remember which show I took this from. It was Alpine Valley or at Fenway, but this is a good one.
No, I totally agree with everything you say. And listeners, there was no theme chosen for today's podcast. So
definitely,
just in case anybody is wondering, I mean, you know, Iris, I didn't talk to you at all before. You know, we have chatted on the phone, but we haven't talked about any of this stuff. So this is, you know, this is, yes, one more little bit of serendipity that seems to flow through all conversations dead related. But no, there was no theme assigned to today's conversation. But what's old is new, and what's new is old, kicked off with Chuck Berry. Yeah, it's just it's going down that road. So and I love this road. So much fun. Well, let's go in and hear some St. Stephen from Dead & Company, and then we'll be back with one more story and one more song.
Okay.
tricks now and then. Stealing it up in Lower Town and Lower Town again.
Listening to St. Stephen with Dead & Company. And, you know, I started asking you about past Dead & Company and future Dead & Company, and then I, in classic form, hijacked the conversation with my own personal story with my husband. But we never got to future Dead & Company. And when we did talk before, you had told me that you have some plans this summer, and I want to have you share them because they just make my heart smile.
Yes. Well, like I said, we went to the Boulder shows last year with the whole family. And my son, I mean, he's 7, he turns 8 next week, actually. And he has developed quite a fondness for this music and for this band. And he was really sad when we went to Boulder to see these shows, but he himself did not go to the shows. And so what I told him was, well, you know, you're a little young, and I really wanted to see the scene and just kind of get a sense for, you know, is it going to be safe for a kid that young, and is he going to have a good time? And so I told him last summer, if he played his cards right, then maybe we would get to go to a show next year. But at that point, I didn't know, like, you know, we never know. Is this band, every time they announce a tour, will this be the end of it? You know, some of these guys are getting old, and, you know, some of these guys have other projects, and we never know. There's no certainty that this will ever happen again. And so they announced summer tour, I think it was back in December. And I snatched up tickets, 6 shows. I mean, they opened the tour in Las Vegas and Phoenix, and so those are both driving distance for me. And then they're doing Boulder again driving distance for me. And they finished the tour in Chicago. They're playing 2 nights at Wrigley Field. And I have a cousin who lives in Chicago. He's a big Dead fan. I mean, he used to tour with them back in the late 80s. And, you know, sell shirts and whatever. And he gave me a shirt and, you know, some tapes back then. And it was a really kind of formative thing for me. But I never had any expectation that I would go to all of those shows. I was just hoping to, you know, maybe do 4 of the 6. And the way it just sort of ended up was my wife is going back east. She's actually going to a wedding in Boston in June. And she's going with her mom and my daughter, who's now 5. And she approached me and said, you know, I'm doing this trip with our daughter. It would be really neat if you did something with your son so he didn't feel left out. Why don't you two go to Chicago? And this was just sort of dropped in my lap,
wow.
Which, got some plane tickets and told Jackson that he's going to get to go. And we've been talking about it a lot. I always have Dead music on. It's 70% of what I play around the house. And he likes it, but it's not something that he had really, like, you know, actively taken a role in much. You know, he would notice songs or, you know, oh, I like that one, whatever. But over the last month or two since we've talked about doing this trip, he's really, oh, can you play that version of,
aww,
you know,
that's so cool.
of playing in the
so
band.
Cool.
Yeah.
And
I did this thing with him one time, you know, we're listening to some version of China Rider and I was just kind of rewinding, you know, I'm like, right here's the moment where, you know, we transition from one song to the next. And he, you know, he heard that and thought that was pretty neat. And so now every time we play a China Rider, he's like, you know, is that it? Is that it? Oh, there it is. You know,
aww.
And, but he's doing, like, he'll do it just kind of reflexively now, like, we listen to some show, whatever, and he'll be like, oh, that's, you know, is that Eyes of the World starting up, you know? And it's just, yeah.
Wow.
He's turning into a absolute hardcore little Deadhead. And so,
so
I think we're going to have a great time.
Ah, so you made a trip of a lifetime. And, you know, that's such a great age because, I mean, when I think back to childhood, I feel like 7, 8, I mean, those are your, like, earliest solid memories, you know? I mean, I have, like, flashes of, you know, when you're 4, 5, 6, but I
right.
don't know. I think 7, 8 years old is when you, you know, it's a lifetime experience. I mean, obviously lifetime meaningful for you with your son, but that'll be something that he'll take with him forever, you know, that weekend away with his dad and the music. And that's just, it's so beautiful. I love
yeah.
it. Love it. Well, this plays into the last song selections. Jackson, your son.
Yes.
What would he pick for his final selection?
Well, I mean, his favorite Dead song is Jackaroo. I mean, his nickname is Jack, and he loves Jackaroo. And we've, you know, played many, many different versions of that song. My daughter, her name is Evangeline, and she really loves He's Gone because nothing left to do but smile, smile, smile. She actually has a T-shirt that says smile, smile, smile.
Aww.
And so she really wanted me to pick either that song or Evangeline by Jerry Band.
No, we'll play them both. Hey, I've got 2 kids. What's fair is fair, man. No,
yeah.
I mean, we will play them both. This podcast is a digital scrapbook for you. It's fun. It's ad hoc. You can send me the other file and we'll just do one after the other because, you know, you gotta you got 2 kids, you're gonna have two favorites. Absolutely.
They'll think it's great. They think this whole thing is awesome. Like every day they're like, Daddy, are you gonna be on the radio today?
You know what you're gonna have to do is when this is on Fish Creek Radio, shout
yes.
out to Rick, you're gonna have to play it because they do it live. So you'll have the podcast and I'll send you the MP3 to just have. But
yeah, cool.
when it's on live, like there's kind of something fun about that too,
yeah.
you know, because it's like boom. So we'll give you the heads up on that. But cool. No, we're gonna add them both. So Evangeline and Jack, we got one for both of you. I have a Joe and a Julia, and you know, one can't get you know, four M&Ms without the other getting four M&Ms.
Of course, as a mom,
I would never pick one song and not the other, because that's just not fair. So right on. Well, let's go in and play these for your children, and then we'll come back and we'll do a little goodbye.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
There was a wealthy merchant in London, he did dwell. He had a beautiful daughter, the truth to you I'll tell. Oh, the truth to you I'll tell. She had sweethearts aplenty and men of high degree. None but Jack the Sailor, her true love ever could be. Jackie's gone sailing with trouble on his mind. He's left his native country and his darling girl behind. Oh, his darling girl behind. She went out to a tailor shop and dressed in men's parade. She climbed on board a vessel and conveyed herself away. Before you get on board, sir, your name we'd like to know. She smiled all in her countenance, they called me Jack-a-roll. Oh, they called me Jack-a-roll. Thank you.
Now he's gone.
Listening to the last couple selections, and this has just been so much fun. I'm so glad that we that you made the time to come on and share your stories and your music with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've come to really enjoy your podcast and the stories that have been on it. Always makes me smile. It's always a nice addition to my week, and so I thank you for the invitation, and it's been a ton of fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, actually, I'm just thinking back to how we met. Is how we met is you sent me a message that you, like, listened to the podcast and that you enjoyed it. And then I said, why don't you come on and be a guest? And then we kind of started the dialogue. So I will give a shout-out to anybody who's listening to this podcast. Send me a message, and I will invite you along to be a guest. Because I just, I mean, it's so much fun. And now I have a new friend to, you know, to banter about music with. And strangers stopping strangers. It's awesome. So I thank you for messaging me and getting the ball started.
Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed talking about these things. They're like my favorite things in life, and they make me smile.
Fantastic. Well, until next time, thank you and bye.
Everybody's praying in the heart of gold man, heart of gold man.